From the land to Grand Hyatt University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of December, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM, Total Grain Marketing. That's the elevator right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Then a bit later in the program, Drew Lerner will be here with a detailed explanation of how cropping conditions are ensuing in Argentina and Brazil, and a quick look at next week's potential winter weather in the upper Midwest and the northern plains. And along the way, I'll bring you up to speed on all the agricultural news for the afternoon on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media online at willag.org, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at 641 and a quarter, four higher. The May at 642 and three quarters, 3 3/4 of a cent higher. And December futures at $5.96 and a quarter, up 3 cents for Wednesday afternoon. January beans at 1472, up 17. The March at 1477 and a quarter, 15 and three quarters higher. And November soybeans up 12 at $13.98 and three quarters. Bean meal futures at 459, up 10 and a half cents, and the bean oil for the day at $60.96, 66 cents lower for the afternoon. Wheat futures soft red at 749 and a half, up 20 and a half, and the hard red at 848 and three quarters, 18 and three quarters of a cent higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago settled at 153.55, down 7.5 cents. Feeders at 180.90 for 100 pounds, 90 cents lower, and lean hogs down 27.5 cents at $86.65 on the day. Crude oil at $71.81 a barrel, down $2.41. Diesel fuel or heating oil, 14 6/10 cents lower. It's $2.76 7/10 cents. And wholesale price of gasoline down 7 2/10 cents at $2.07 6/10 cents. Natural gas at $5.75. That's up 28.1 cents for the day. Gold futures at $1,799.40. Up $17. Greg Johnson now joins us from TGM, Total Grain Marketing in Champaign County. Hi, Greg. Thank you for being with us. It's a bit of a ho-hum month usually when we get to December. There has been some volatility, of course, and last week EPA put some volatility into the market, and then on Friday this week there's a WASDE report, but I'm guessing that what you've been mostly watching rather than the futures is the appreciation, particularly in the soybean market as it relates to basis. It has closed up quickly, hasn't it?
It really has. As soon as harvest finished up, we've seen basis improve. We all know South America is in the process of planting, and they will have a potentially big crop come March. But until then, the export market belongs to the United States, and there's been a fair amount of flash sales made in soybeans to the unknown or Chinese destinations. And so we've really seen basis levels improve in soybeans once harvest finished up. A lot of the processors are paying 20, 25 over. Local elevators are in single digits under. So, yes, basis has definitely improved just in the last month and a half.
Well, as you think about that, and China in particular, I'm wondering whether that nation and the news that's coming out of it is positive or negative. You kind of see both on the idea that they're opening up and maybe more more economic activity as their COVID restrictions are loosened. On the other hand, the fear is that COVID will begin to run loose, really loose, and things might tighten back down very, very fast. Have you got a handle on what the trade thinks?
Well, you're exactly right. The trade is looking at focusing on both of those factors. One, the near term, it does appear that it's a little friendly. We should see economic activity start to pick up. It's been, in shutdown in a lot of cities in China for several months now, and so we're expecting a little bit of an economic bounce. But that just reminds us, as you say, longer term, any little rebound or reoccurrence of the COVID virus, especially in China, where they tried to do the zero tolerance thing, can shut things down. And, you know, people say, well, you know, they still have to eat. But you have to remember, a lot of the traders, you know, are fund traders. And so they look at that and they take positions, whether it's, and they may actually overdo it a little bit. You know, if China backs off a little and then the funds back off as well, it kind of exacerbates the move. So we can see bigger moves one way or the other, more than what the actual export numbers are or aren't out of China.
Domestically, why is it that end users for soybeans are on the hunt so aggressively?
Well, I think there's very little carry in the market, for one thing. So the market is telling us to move the beans now. But exports are very good. Crush margins are very positive. We've given back a little bit of the crush margins, but I think crush margins are still approaching almost a dollar a bushel. So there's an incentive to crush beans domestically. And then every once in a while, we get a flash sale to unknown destinations or to China. So exports have been very good, and domestic crush has been very good.
And in the corn market, how are the exports at this point?
Exports. I wish I could say exports are good in corn, but we've really lagged behind. We've been lagging behind ever since the marketing year started back in September. We are way behind. That's why most traders are thinking the government's probably going to cut their export number on Friday down 50 million bushels, because we're just that far behind pace on corn exports. And maybe at some point in time we will, you know, start to pick up, but we haven't yet. And until we do, I think the market is kind of in a defensive mode right now. The farmers aren't selling, so that's helping us a little bit as far as the overall price. But without export demand, there's just not enough positive news in the domestic demand front to offset that disappointing export number. So we really need to see exports pick up at some point in time if we want to see corn prices work higher again.
Any expectation there'll be changes Friday morning when USDA releases the monthly WASDE?
On the demand side, I think you'll see exports down 50 million on corn. I'm not sure they changed ethanol numbers or feed usage numbers on corn, but I do expect a 50 million bushel drop in exports. And as for soybeans, you know, we may drop them, but I think we probably won't. USDA probably won't until they get a little bit better handle on the South American crop. They're just getting beans planted down there. Brazil's off to a good start. Argentina's off to a dry start. But it's only December, and late January, early February is their critical time frame. That's when they start filling pods, setting pods. So, you know, I don't know that the USDA will go out on a limb and change anything just yet as far as export demand out of the U.S. I think they might wait another month and see how the South American crop develops.
Farmers seem satisfied not to do anything at this point.
I think everybody's kind of wishing they maybe would have sold corn 30, 40 cents ago. We've lost about 50 cents since the 1st of September. And as it turns out, we have an extra 30 bushels, at least in our area, than compared to what we thought we had. So I think farmers now know what they've got. They're wishing they would have sold. So now I think they're going to be, you know, probably trying to make some catch-up sales if we do get a bounce. We've dropped about 50 cents in corn, so if we can gain back half of that, let's say, I think farmers might be more willing to sell corn on a small rally from here on out.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM, Total Grain Marketing, here in Champaign County, Illinois. Here's one quick ag news story out of Washington, D.C. Ag Research was the farm bill title before the Senate Ag Committee yesterday, as USDA and other witnesses testified on the need to fund cutting-edge ag research, the power behind modern, high-tech agriculture. But Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley said before the hearing that it's been neglected in past farm bills.
The United States is falling way behind our competitors in investing in ag research. China is now the largest funder of ag research and development.
Federal investments in agricultural research have declined by a third in the past two decades. Existing ARS and NIFA programs are helping, but today's ag needs more bite-sized, usable technology, more ways to reduce huge input cost, and more veterinarians along with healthier food to reduce exploding health care cost. And all of it will take money, that according to the USDA chief of research. Up next, we'll review the U.S. EPA numbers related to the renewable volume obligations and RFS that were released last week. Those new RFS numbers from the Environmental Protection Agency do keep ethanol on the right track, according to Emily Scorb. Chad Smith has more with her and Growth Energy.
The Environmental Protection Agency released the long-awaited renewable fuel standard blending requirements for 2023 through 2025. Growth Energy CEO Emily Scorr says she welcomes the move.
We're grateful to President Biden and EPA Administrator Regan for keeping clean energy on an upward trajectory that will move America closer to a net zero future. As we saw again this summer, biofuels remain the single best tool available to shield motorists from volatile global oil prices and rapidly decarbonize the transportation sector. We are greatly encouraged by EPA's strong proposal and appreciative of Administrator Regan's support for the growing role ethanol continues to play in decarbonizing the transportation sector now and into the future.
She talks about what's next for the biofuels industry.
Our opportunities for growth across both conventional and advanced biofuels are linked, so it's important that EPA's volumes continue to reflect industry growth and innovation, especially when it comes to renewable diesel. We're also appreciative that the proposal keeps EPA on track to restore the final 250 million gallons of biofuel demand that had been illegally waived in the agency's 2016 rule, a long overdue fix that began with the 2022 volumes. We do, however, want to ensure that the final rule preserves the integrity of the RFS when it comes to new renewable fuel sources, like those tracked by eRINs. All new pathways must include safeguards to address double counting, fraud risks, and other requirements to ensure that truly renewable energy is being harnessed to fuel our transportation needs.
SCORE also says EPA needs to make the path smoother for more advanced biofuel development in the future.
At the same time, the agency must clear the backlog of pathway approvals for advanced and cellulosic biofuels, including cellulosic biofuels from kernel fiber and advanced biofuels from corn oil produced at ethanol wet mills, and better leverage this opportunity to account for all of the innovation taking place in the renewable transportation industry. That will require updated modeling to reflect the best available science on low-carbon ethanol, including benefits of carbon capture technology and other innovations biofuel plants are deploying in the production of sustainable aviation fuel. We look forward to working with the agency as it finalizes this proposal so that we're tapping the full potential of the RFS and meeting EPA's final rule deadline included under a consent decree with Growth Energy. America's biofuel producers and our farm partners are ready to lead the charge on climate and energy solutions, and a firm commitment to growth will offer regulatory certainty and predictability in the years ahead.
Again, that's Growth Energy CEO Emily Scorr. Chad Smith reporting.
That report from Chad Smith comes courtesy of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. Let's check the weather forecast on this Wednesday with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Find him online at worldweather.cc. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us on a Wednesday again.
Yes, sir. I hope you've had a good week. It's been good here.
It has been a good week. I'm wondering about the South American weather forecast, particularly as we work our way from Argentina through Brazil. But that Argentina area, again, continues to be dry. I know they've had some rainfall, but I'm wondering how much and whether it's really made any difference at all.
Yeah, you know, yesterday I spent a couple hours going back 39 years of vegetative health index satellite imagery from NOAA to see if I could find another year that was as dry as it has been in Argentina this year, and I could find none. 2008 was the next driest early December that I could find on the charts where their crops were just totally stressed like they are now. And so it's very unique in that sense. And thinking back to all the way back through those years, I do not recall any other growing season where we started off dry and we really never really got over it. We've had some bouts of rain, like you stated, but there have been too many periods of drier weather embedded there, so the crops are really struggling. Of course, when the winter wheat crop was slashed, and the early corn and sunseed are really struggling in parts of the country. Now, we have had some recent beneficial moisture in parts of Buenos Aires and southern Cordoba, and that's really helped some of the recently planted corn and sorghum well as soybeans and even some peanuts. In fact, according to the ag minister down there in Argentina, the peanut crop is actually ahead of schedule. That's the only crop that is that way. And that's because most of the peanuts are produced in Cordoba. And that's one of the places where rain has been very timely here recently. However, with all that rambling said, the central and northern part of Argentina is critically dry. Most of Santa Fe, Santiago del Estero, Chaco, portions of Entre Rios and Corrientes, all those states have almost been 3 to 4 weeks dry now. And temperatures yesterday and the day before were in the range of 98 to 105, very hot across a big part of the country, and that's on top of the dry soil. So we are experiencing a lot of serious stress. The good news is for them down there is that there will be an opportunity for some rain coming up. And this will occur Friday into Saturday as a first round. And then there'll be a second round that may occur in eastern parts of the country briefly as we go Sunday into Monday. After that, we'll go through most of next week without much precipitation, maybe more shower activity at the end of the week. The bottom line is that none of this rain is going to be big drought-busting rains, but any precipitation has to be better than nothing. But it looks like the southwest one-third of the country, including southern Cordoba, Buenos Aires, and La Pampa, will go without meaningful rain through a big part of the next 10 days or so. So that'll be the new area that dries out too much.
Well, that is serious. I'm wondering, because Uruguay, parts of Brazil, border Argentina, of course. Uruguay does. Are the crops in those areas, in that southern part of Brazil and in Uruguay, in the same kind of tough conditions?
You know, those crops there have suffered to a very low degree. If you go back, though, and look at the last 3 months of rainfall data for eastern Argentina, Uruguay, Rio Grande do Sul, and some immediate neighboring areas there in Paraguay and maybe Santa Catarina, you'll see that the percent of normal rainfall is very low, 50% less than normal. And for the three-month period, even a couple of spots, 25% of normal. And that's pretty significant. But what is interesting, when you look at that region from a soil moisture perspective, it has been favorably moist through most of that period of time. It's only been here real recently that the topsoil has begun to firm up and a little stress has begun to evolve. So as of this moment in time, those areas in southern Brazil in particular have not experienced any serious amount of stress, and their yield potential is still looking good. Now, they will dry down over these next several days, and there'll be a chance for some shower activity maybe late in the weekend in western Rio Grande and a few areas in Uruguay. But better rain will probably come along during the early to middle part of next week, where all of that region will see some rain. It'll probably be 1 to 2 inch amounts, and that should be sufficient to keep them, again, from going over the edge. So southern Brazil and a fair amount of Uruguay have not fallen off the edge here and are really still in a position where they can yield well, whereas Argentina is a totally different situation where it's much more serious with the dryness there.
Moving north from the areas, and just to give folks an idea, north of Rio de Janeiro, the Sao Paulo area, moving north from there into some of the other growing regions, and you can go a long way north from there. What do things look like for the rest of the country?
You know, the percent of normal precipitation for much of center west and center south Brazil has also been less than normal. That includes from Mato Grosso into Sao Paulo and parts of Paraná. And that particular region, if you look at it again from a percent of normal perspective, you might get a little worried because, again, some of the rainfall has been half of normal. But what's very interesting is that the soil moisture in much of that area has never got to the point of critical dryness. Now, with that said, there are several locations in southern Mato Grosso that did go through a period of very limited moisture and probably got that crop off to a relatively poor start. But as you know, soybeans are pretty smart plants, and when they're stressed, they'll just shut down for a little while and wait for better rains. Well, the better rains are coming, And they have had some timely rainfall in this past week, and the crop should be stimulated back into developing more aggressively. So most of that region that you're asking about, it has really been in good shape. I always remember, and when it comes to Brazil, that normal rainfall is normally too much for an ideal crop. And any year that they have less than normal rainfall, but it occurs in a timely manner, they will yield very well. And I think that's where we're at for this particular year.
Here in the United States, I'm told there may be a winter storm or a great deal of precipitation, snowfall sometime next week for the northern part of the Midwest. Is that right?
Yeah, the northern plains and the upper Midwest. Right now, it's poised for the Dakotas for the heavy snow, but areas eastward into Minnesota and Wisconsin and Iowa will have a very good chance for seeing a significant rain event followed by snow. But the heavier snows will be most likely in the Dakotas, maybe a part of Minnesota. This occurs during the early to middle part of next week, probably Tuesday, Wednesday, a week from now, more or less. And the setup looks real impressive because there's going to be a buildup of cold air in the western United States and in western Canada, and it's going to be much warmer in the Midwest than what it's been here recently. And so that's immediately sets the stage for a chance for more aggressive storm development. And then we also have an upper level wind flow pattern that'll be southwest to northeast through the middle of the country. And that's going to pull moisture from the Gulf of Mexico right up into that area of greatest temperature contrast. So we will see a significant storm next week, perhaps in the north central United States. And we're talking substantial snows, blizzard conditions possibly, and perhaps the first decent rain distribution event in the upper Mississippi basin for quite some time.
Speaking of the Mississippi, does the lower Mississippi River pick up any precipitation to relieve some of the drought stress that has been happening there, or at least bring back the river flow?
Yeah, the Tennessee River basin including Tennessee, the northern parts of Mississippi, northern Alabama, some neighboring areas in Georgia, and some neighboring areas in Kentucky. Those areas have been seeing a big increase in rain frequency and rain volumes recently. And the ground is saturated or nearly saturated in that area. And we are expecting another 2 to 4 and local 5 or 6 inches of rainfall in that same area as we go forward through the coming week. So all of the rain that has occurred recently has already begun to go down the Tennessee River into the lower Mississippi River. And so we're seeing some improvement in the water levels to the south of Memphis. We're probably going to see that trend continuing as we go forward through the next 7 days or so. The one river basin that's really not doing well is still the Ohio. And really, for that matter, the lower Missouri River is still very low, too. And both those rivers are not going to see big improvements in their water levels for a while. So that may keep that mid-Mississippi Valley area, as well as the lower Missouri, lower Ohio area, still running low on water levels, whereas the lower Mississippi will probably see a nice boost in those levels.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Find him online at worldweather.cc. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.